Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Cole Pettum here as always, and of course we're here to talk all things Aston Villa Football Club with a 1-1 draw against West Ham at the London Stadium on this fine Sunday. Of course, you're all likely hearing this on the Monday or the Tuesday of now what is an international break. So boo-hoo, that sucks for all of us. But regardless of that, hopefully you guys enjoy this podcast. And that, again, I'll say this for the millionth time, I should do this more. But if you're a new listener or someone that's been listening for a while and hasn't subscribed or left a review, please do so on whatever podcast platform you are listening to us on. It's always appreciated, and it just makes it easier for other people to find us. But nonetheless, it's not just me, because I generally wouldn't want to listen to myself for 20 minutes. We do have Mr. Consistent, Mr. Simon O'Regan, with the Villa top on, I believe so, which he traditionally has on. So, Simon, how's it going for you? Oh, look at that. Yeah, he almost flashed me. Oh, my God.
Classic Muller kit there. Yeah, not too bad. It's a bit more eventful and sort of nerve-wracking right at the end there than you would have liked. But, you know, we kind of said beforehand yesterday, I think when we were messaging, well, I certainly said that I'd take a point, to be honest. So, yeah, I mean, you can't be too disappointed, I think, coming away from West Ham with the points. No, that's certainly how I see it anyway.
Yeah, I think it was one of those, and I think even said in our Holtcast group chat that I either felt like it was going to be a very back and forth game or one between two teams that clearly were exhausted from playing on Thursday. And to be honest, I think we got a little bit of a mix of both of that. And maybe you could say, I guess, in a cop-out way, that is to be expected. But regardless, it was 1-1 at the London. Oh, Jesus, I don't know where that is, at the London Stadium. Of course, Mikel Antonio hasn't scored for about 6 years, it feels like. Scores against Villa in the 29th minute, of course, and that man, Simon O'Regan's favorite Villa player of all time, Nicolò Zaniolo, scoring the equalizer in the 79th minute, assisted by Moussa Diaby, who has actually, maybe that'll be someone we speak about today, who's actually been in very, very fine form. And I'm sure Simon wants to make a point on him as well, because he did make a very valuable point in our group chat too. So Simon, I'll spin this one to you, because this one is kind of a weird game to talk about, because it's not like there was a crazy amount that happened, but there are definitely two major talking points with two West Ham goals being chalked off. I mean, rightly so. VAR chalked them off for both being handballs, if I'm thinking correctly, which again is correct. So I guess you can't really sit there and say that Villa were susceptible and too weak in those moments, because technically they wouldn't have counted regardless. But I mean, from a defensive perspective, what did you make of how Villa set up today? Because I see a lot of things online, just talking to people, whatever, if it's people in the group chat as well. It feels like we're just kind of chopping and changing the back line so much that it feels like we're losing a little bit of that rhythm that we had earlier on in the season. But what do you make of it?
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I think you've got to put the context behind why that's happening. And it is... a mixture of injuries and a busy schedule of games. Like it's going to happen. It's not ideal. I'm sure Emery wouldn't want to have to constantly change the back four each week. But you know, Carlos obviously went off injured on Thursday night, so you have to make that change. You know, you can't play an injured player. So I do get the point, and I think that's certainly probably contributing to why we really struggled to keep a clean sheet. But I actually thought today, I didn't think we were that bad defensively. If you look at, well, this is how I saw the game, the first half, or the first 15, 20 minutes, I thought we were in complete control of that game. You dominating possession, didn't really offer much going forwards, but we were well in control of the game. And to be fair, it just has to be said that West Ham do allow opposition teams to do that because they like to play on the counter-attack. So it kind of suited the both of us. And it was very much like a game of chess at that point. And then for some reason, I think this sort of leads into something that we've seen all season. really, is that there's an element of complacency does seem to come into our game far too quickly. And it seemed like after 20 minutes, I just thought, this is a stroll in the park. And we became so sloppy. And the goal we gave away, they came from, we had a free kick in our, near the corner, plays it back to Longley, who somehow managed to lose it to Antonio. And 10 seconds later, the ball's in the back of the net. Like, it's such an unnecessary goal to give away. And then from that, for the rest of that half, we weren't great. But again, I really think West Ham, I don't think that it wasn't like they were peppering our goal. Like, we were struggling, but I didn't feel like we were, under constant pressure from them. And then the second half, I thought we pretty much dominated the whole of that second half. The set piecing, that clearly is a problem, has been for a while. We do look vulnerable from set pieces. But I think the point that you made as well, the two goals that we conceded from set pieces, they were handballs. So it's, do you count that as bad defending? It's like, I remember when we beat Tottenham away back in November, and at half time on the TV, they were showing all the chances that Spurs has had, but five of them were offside, so they don't count. It's not, they're not chances. So yeah, it's a funny one. Like, I do think we do look vulnerable from set pieces, but the fact that both of them were handballs today, you can't really get too angry about that. I don't think.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things you probably get away with and maybe gets kind of swept under the carpet a little bit, maybe so. And I guess maybe some people would think we'd be a little harsh to go into them. But I mean, again, with rotation, keeping in mind just playing against Ajax on the Thursday, Konsa coming in at right back, not necessarily saying I don't like Konsa being at right back, but I mean, with Cash playing on Thursday, you kind of expect these changes, and those changes are going to impact the game. But again, even when you look at the stats of the entirety of the game, I don't know what game I was watching, but it didn't feel like Villa had 70% of the ball, but they did. 13 shots apiece for each in terms of attempts. Both teams had five shots on target. West Ham had seven corners to our 11, and there was 13 fouls for West Ham and 12 for Villa. So a pretty physical game all in all. But when you sit back and you look at the stats, I mean, that's a lot of possession, and people can look at that, maybe not watching the game, and kind of wonder how Villa didn't win it. But it was Villa with a lot of movement on the ball, but as expected, a David Moyes side, be very compact, very tight. Villa had their opportunities to kind of counter on the break. I can think of Leon Bailey a few times holding on to the ball a little bit too long. Morgan Rodgers did it quite a few times, or didn't play a man through, or just be kind of wayward passes you'd expect Longley or whoever to play through and to break that defensive line. And it just went right to a West Ham player. So it just kind of felt like there was that kind of lack of overall cohesion today. But what do you maybe put that down to, Simon? Is it tired legs? Is it, where does it sit with you?
I think in sometimes I think you've got to credit the opposition as well. Like, you've got to remember there's two teams on the pitch, and that is how West Ham set up. They're happy for you to have the ball, and they were very well organized. We did have a lot of the ball, and I certainly felt that we did have a lot of the ball. And that's where you need to move it quickly. If you're against a well-organized team who are happy to sit back, you've got to move the ball a bit more quickly, especially when you get into the final third. But I think what you need to do as well, and we've seen us do it on time to season, but also seen us not do it like today, is not try and force it. Have that patience. I know it must be frustrating. If you're one of the midfielders, or even sometimes you see the centre backs out there, you have the ball for so long, and you're passing off and getting it back, passing off and getting it back, and you think, well, we need to do something. So you just, you hit an aimless ball forwards, but you're just playing right into the opposition hands. So yeah, there's maybe an element of tiredness to it, but I don't know if I would say that was the case today, because we had the ball for so long. So if you've got the ball, you're not as tired as the opposition. So I think it's more a case of, I think West Ham were well drilled with what they do, and we probably just tried to force it a bit too quickly. And it was when we started doing that in the first half, that was the moment where that half kind of turned for me when you started seeing us giving the ball away a bit more cheaply, trying to play passes that aren't really on when there's an easier pass on to keep possession and keep it going.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm just even looking at West Ham's starting lineup midweek compared to when they played us today. And the only changes they made was at left back. Of course, Emerson came in for Cresswell, and in goal, Ariel came in for Fabianski. So, I mean, you do expect, I mean, fair play to them for being able to even put that performance out, considering that it's basically the same team within a matter of days. Fair enough. And to be that compact and that restricted. So fair play to them. But I mean, to maybe spin this another way, I do want to talk about one player in particular, and that is, I guess there's two. I'm just trying to decide in my head which one I want you to go off on a tangent about. So let's do this in no particular order. Let's talk about that man, Zaniolo. I mean, I know who's your favorite Villa player of all time, Simon, but I mean, what do you make of him today and just his time at Villa? It's just, he's a little bit of an enigma, I guess you could say, a very odd enigma in terms of the lack of impact. He's come up clutch a few times, really hasn't been overall effective. But at the same time, I sit back and I look at it as a loan signing. I don't really know what I'm ever meant to really expect of him. But where does that sit with you?
Yeah, I mean, when he first came, I thought the first maybe like 6, 7, 8 games, I thought that you could see that there was talent there, that he was almost trying too hard at times. And he thought he needs a moment that will set him off. And then he got his goal away at Mostar, I think it was in the Conference League. And then a couple of weeks later, he comes on and gets that late equaliser against Sheffield United. And you're thinking, okay, right, like that should have been the moment for him to like really sort of take off and get going. But it just hasn't happened. Like, it really hasn't. And when he comes on now, I mean, as I said in the group chat, like I think he's a waste of space on the pitch. I will say, I did send that. You know, sometimes you send a message and you think, I hope this comes back to, you know, there was an element of that as I was putting that message in, but I don't really understand what he offers. Like, he looks like he's got slower. Like when he first came, he looked like really quick and quite strong. But when you see him now, kind of all he seems to do is foul people and give the ball away, like lose the ball from an almost unlosable position. And I mean, look, fair play. He took his goal well today. Got, you know, made a really good run, and it was a really nice finish. Like really, really nice finish, actually, to be fair. So credit where it's due. You know, he's come up big for us because, you know, we needed to get something from the game today. But I would be absolutely stunned if that loan move was made permanent, especially when you know you've got Buendia back next season and hopefully a properly fully fit Jacob Ramsey. So there'd be no place for him. And also you've got Tiedemann who can play out on that left. So I'd be, yeah, absolutely amazed if we see Zaniolo at Villa Park after this season.
Do you think his kind of question mark in terms of his role and his impact could also be the playing time? I mean, coming on in cameo roles the majority of the season can be difficult, and to be clutch in a majority of those is nearly impossible for most. And I mean, you can probably think of several Premier League footballers throughout the Premier League's history. I mean, you probably think of like Solskjaer or whoever else you want to throw in there. There's a very restricted list that could actively come off the bench and make an impact for any football club. You look at Zaniolo, hasn't really started a lot. I don't know maybe if that's a consequence of something in his loan to buy deal in terms of if he plays this many, you have to buy him or whatever. And maybe there's a cop out for that, for bringing him on as a substitute instead. I mean, do you think that's plausible? Maybe if he started maybe a little bit more, we could see something different from him. Because we thought that about Bailey. Then Bailey made an impact off the bench and kind of forced him way into the team. So that's, I guess, a counter to that argument already. But
I was going to mention Leon Bailey and also more recent weeks, Moussa Diaby as well. You know, you're not always going to come on and you know, score every game or get an assist every game, but you can at least affect the game in a positive way. You know, you can do something. And to be fair, the first half of the certainly the first couple of months, Zaniolo did start, you know, a decent number of games in a row and didn't really do anything. So, and like you say, Bailey was coming on and was making an impact. So, I mean, yeah, I don't think he could kind of use that as any sort of excuse. He was given chances at the start of the season, didn't really take them. And then when he's been coming on in games, he's very rarely, you know, done anything to suggest that he should be starting. So, and yeah, it's a shame because, as I say, when he first came, those first few weeks, I did think, okay, you can see there's a talented player there. And he obviously is a talented footballer. You don't play at Roma, Galatasaray, Villa for Italy if you're not a talented footballer. But you look at him sometimes and he just looks so disinterested and like kind of like a bit of an attitude maybe as well. So, yeah, if Emery isn't able to get anything out of him, then you might have to write it off as a lost cause.
Yeah, and I think for the Villa side of things, I think he will be written off as a lost cause. Don't like really calling people that, but I think in terms
it hasn't worked out. But come the end of the season,
yeah,
those 2 points that he got us, especially the Sheffield United, you know, because that was like last fucking kick of the game type thing. You know, those 2 points could be vital, and he could well have possibly played his part in us finishing in the top four. So from that point of view, you'd say, okay, it hasn't worked out, but you did at least contribute something to this.
How many Villa players, Simon, do you think in the past, I don't know, X number of years we've done this podcast together, can we label as having an impact like Zaniolo, where they've gotten us 2 points or something like that? That's bugger all they've done, but we think it's like the greatest thing ever. I feel like I can't think of anyone in particular in the name, but I feel like we've had this discussion at least a few times. But the other player I did want to bring up, and I don't think we've ever really discussed him in depth, and that's Morgan Rodgers. What did you make of him today? I think he's just been very interesting since the moment he's came in, because a lot of people question the fee, considering Middlesbrough just bought him for like £1 million or whatever it was, very, very cheap in the summer. Obviously, the sell-on clause to Villa is more significant to that, but in Premier League terms, it's still pretty cheap. He looks like there is a very young, talented footballer in there, but maybe it's a bit of a passion project for Emery to see what they can really get out of him. And for me, maybe it feels like one of those things where that form is going to have to turn relatively quickly to equate to something. It just, for some reason, it feels like that with January signings especially. But what did you make of his performance today, him coming into the side overall, and maybe what his trajectory might be?
I think he's probably playing because of injuries. I don't think he'd have been playing as much as he had if, say, Ramsey was, you know, Ramsey has been fit, you know, all season. Rodgers is probably only coming on for 10, 15 minutes here or there. He's certainly not starting back-to-back games like he has done now. But like, there's obviously a talented player there, but you've got to remember he's a young lad. He's, you know, this is his first experience of Premier League football, obviously European football in the two games against Ajax. So you kind of, I think you need to, you know, give a bit of leeway. And like you said, January signings as well, getting used to sort of Emery, what he wants from him. It will take time, especially from the kind of like defense, you know, I think he's out of possession where you can clearly see there's work to be done. I think in possession was not great today. Well, I'm saying he gets himself into good position. Like, you know, he's very good at carrying the ball, and he gets himself into a good position to receive the ball kind of on the half turn in a bit of space, and then he can drive at a team. You look, you know, the one today, he, you know, drives through. It's kind of a bit of a weak shot in the end, and you think, could he have slipped that into Watkins? And there was the same actually on Thursday night in the first half. He picked the ball up on the edge of the box and had a decent effort, just dipped over the bar. But again, could that, you know, he could have slipped Diaby in there. But there are things that will come with time and experience. As I say, he's only 21. I think he's shown that there's, you know, real promise there. And that's the fun of the game on Thursday against Ajax. It was a shame that the referee was so mental in the first half, but not allowing slide challenges, because obviously Rodgers had to get hooked at half time because you just couldn't risk him getting sent off. But I actually thought that he played well on Thursday against Ajax, so it was a shame that he'd had to come off. And the same thing at Luton as well, where he got a booking and made a foul, and you think, okay. So But again, you know, that's young, inexperienced, and those things will come with time. So yeah, I've been relatively happy with how he's done so far. You know, as I say, he's been thrown in at the deep end a little bit, but he's not. I don't look at him and think he's completely out of his depth. You know, the step up from the Championship is he's clearly not ready for it, because it's not like he's massively struggled. So yeah, I think he's done all right.
Well, the interesting thing with him, and I felt like this from the moment he actually touched a ball in the Premier League, was that you could tell the way his movement, the way he passes the ball, you could tell he's at that level and can do well. And I think that's evident. And I not to be harsh, but I feel like a lot of Villa players in the past, I could think of where that first touch and you're going, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I love Marvos Nakamba, but every time he got the ball, I thought, oh my God, where is this going to go?
Rodgers was... He would, you know, there's a reason. I mean, West Brom produce a lot of good players. And normally, we obviously get them direct from West Brom these days. But yeah, Man City took him from West Brom for a couple of years. They're not going to take someone who's not a talented. And like, so, you know, things like you say there, that first touch is instantly under control. And as I say, he gets himself into really, I think, coming in off that wing, into really clever positions in the middle of the park between the opposition midfield and defence. And that first touch, he's already turned and then driving at them. So, you know, once he kind of gets a bit more used to sort of regular game time, I think you could see a really good player, but you probably won't see him really kick on until next season, once he's had a full pre-season under Emery.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to wrap up the West Ham portion of this podcast, to be honest, I don't think there's a lot we have to kind of put to bed on this one. But to end this part of the pod, I mean, happy with the point, Simon?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's a tough place to go. The one thing I do want to say as well, I've already seen... you know, a few headlines from people from like Match of the Day and Sky, you know, Sky Sports and stuff. Stop fucking calling this a controversial VAR decision. The last time I checked, you can't play basketball to score a goal. Two of them, Souček deliberately moves his arm and it rolls off Bowen's hands into the back of the net. Like, there's nothing controversial about disallowing a goal that's being put in by two people's arms.
Oh, that one kills me, because it was bouncing literally up and down straight. It had a better chance if no one touched it, of it just randomly spinning forward because maybe like a divot in the ground or something like that. Then like the fact that I'm doing the motion, I know people can't see it, but the fact that his shoulder is moving forward gives you a good inclination that his whole arm is moving as well. I don't know how they took like 7 minutes with that, to be honest.
If you want to talk about controversial handball, how the fuck did we not get a penalty in that first half?
Oh, yeah. I don't even know how I missed that. Maybe let's talk about that for a minute.
I cannot for the life of me work out how that's not been given, or how he's not even been told to go and have a look at that. It's ridiculous. Emerson has got his arm out. Now, okay, he's pointing to for a defender to cover something, but that is not a natural position to have your arm out pointed like that. I was unbelievable that wasn't given.
Well, you're always taught, even at a young age, to keep your hands behind your backs when you're defending and backing up. I mean, that is the standard now. A lot of players leave their arms out, but you can't say because he has his arm out and he's like pointing to somebody or doing something.
Mm.
Like, you can still be in the box and aim to flick it off someone's hand with an intention of getting a handball and that be a penalty. That is a thing. It almost felt like that was the instance of that whole thing, that they was almost going for that, because it didn't really seem like the flick on was going to go anywhere. It didn't seem like there was a lot of power behind it. But it's almost like, oh, well, he didn't mean it. But it's like, okay, but there's so many instances over the last X number of years with VAR especially, where they didn't mean it, but they gave it, especially against Villa. I can think of several in the past. It's just, again, it's inconsistency at its finest.
Just completely baffling. Like, and I've seen a few comments from West Ham fans sort of having a go that they've been robbed. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. Like, there's only one horrific decision in that game involving handball, and it did not go against West Ham.
No, you can't score with your arms or your hands. In the fact that, yeah, I mean, to be honest, when I saw that not being given, I wanted to go on a tangent about how somehow we'll lose this. Of course, they scored like shortly after, and then it would just go into this thing about, oh yeah, now United have a game in hand and they'll catch Villa, even though they're, because that was the narrative being written in the media as soon as it was like 1-0 after like the 65th minute or something like that.
That's
all the media wants to put out. It was like literally, and I know I said this to you before recording, but just the context for everybody, it was literally like, oh, Spurs, it's now in Spurs' hand. They said that for maybe 2 seconds. The next minute was about United. And it was like, what is the context behind this? Villa could win this game 8-0 and they would still focus on like Marcus Rashford's sideburns or something. Like, I just don't get it.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw things at halftime, Sky Sports tweeted out a picture of Emery with the headline of Villa distracted by their Conference League campaign, and everyone's just gone on going, well, what the fuck were Tottenham distracted by yesterday then? Like, we all know, and like, people, if there's any non-Villa fans who for some reason are listening to this, they'll probably think, oh, we're talking nonsense, but we all know the media do not want Villa finishing fourth ahead of Man U or Tottenham. They just do not want that to happen.
And well, they didn't want Newcastle to do it last year either.
Yeah, it's been so obvious all season as well. All the discussions about, lack of discussion really about our football club in the media. We all know it, and that's why I really, really want us to do it. So well, see, badly.
That's the thing. It's like, I don't care if they don't talk about Villa, because I'll do it quietly and they'll succeed quietly. I'm okay with that. It's what they're replacing it with. We got nothing to talk about. Let's talk about Arsenal. It's just like, it could literally be, okay, here's an example. It could be West Ham versus Newcastle. And say, for example, near the end of the season, they're vying for like the last European spot, like the Conference League spot or something. Just for example, I'm not saying it's going to happen.
Yeah.
That'll somehow turn into Man City. Man City aren't battling for the Conference League, but they'll be brought into it for some stupid reason. Again, it's just media as a whole. It's just crap, isn't it? But anyways, enough of that. Let's get over to, I guess, a bit of international news, because now we're technically in an international break, which I'm sure nobody wants. There are several Villa players, of course, being called up to their respective countries. So, of course, congrats to Dougie Luiz, who has been included. I mean, it's well-deserved in about friggin' time. Looks like he could be playing. I think, do England play Brazil coming up? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm going to the two England games, yeah.
Well, there you go. Simon will be on the pisser for that one. So I'm sure we'll see lots of photos in the group chat of that. And of course, Ollie Watkins and Ezri Konsa being called up for England. Very good to see Konsa in there as well. Because, I mean, Watkins should be there regardless. But the fact that Konsa wasn't for the last several just blows my mind. Hopefully he's okay, because he looked a little bit uncomfortable near the end of the West Ham game. So hopefully it's not enough to rule him out for that. I doubt it will be, but we'll have to see. Of course, let's see here. Yuri Tielemans, of course, could also play against England this coming week for Belgium. John McGinn, of course, being called up too. Moussa Diaby being called up for France. Robin Olsen for Sweden. Still makes me laugh. He doesn't play any games, but maybe that's the state of Swedish international football. And the goalkeeper that I will never probably pronounce his name until he plays a game for Villa and they say it correctly. Joe Gauchie, that's what I'm going to call him, is called up to Australia as well, which is probably Villa's true number two goalkeeper at this point in time. But do any of those stick out to you more than any other, Simon?
I'm looking forward to the England Brazil game. Down at Wembley on next Saturday, I think it is. It'd be interesting. So Konsa, he was in the last England squad, but he was the only outfield player who didn't play a single second of football over the two games, which was a fucking joke. So it'd be interesting to see if he actually gets any in the game time. But I mean, this I don't. I don't mind international breaks because I'll go to the games, but I could do without the Belgian game, to be honest.
Well, I can't wait for Jordan Henderson. I know it's different positions, but Jordan
Oh.
Henderson will get more minutes than Konsa in his respective position, yet he couldn't string more than five passes against Villa and blamed everybody else in his team for conceding goals and being out of position and just yelling at them the whole time. But apparently that's leadership.
Honestly, that. Like, oh God, don't get me started on Southgate talking about how he's had such a great impact at Ajax. They've won two of the 10 games since he's been there. And he was appalling on Thursday night against us. I honestly thought he was dreadful. He's just nowhere near good enough to play at this sort of level. I mean, he's struggling in the Dutch league.
I feel like he's had a very hyperinflated career. Not to get me wrong, he was a very good player at one point, but I feel like it was the players around him that brought that out of him. I feel like if he was in any other side aside from that Liverpool team for a few seasons, you wouldn't get the same output because he was, in my opinion, with some of that midfield around him, with Fabinho, I mean, with the attack they had, they were doing more attacking than defending, most certainly. I don't know. I always had a weird feeling that he'd be the odd man out in that team. And I feel like in an Ajax team that's very young, not having a good season, I mean, yes, he's a little bit older, but it definitely shows. Definitely a player that I could see, and no disrespect to Sunderland, him rocking back up at the Stadium Light when he's like 35, 36, just to have a good go, have a few games, realize that he's not at this point in his career anymore and just retire shortly after. It'd be very Jermaine Defoe of him to go back and do that. But regardless of that, let's get over to the Twitter polls, and then we'll do everyone's favorite game, Dean Smith's Juggling Six. I know we just did it earlier in the week, but that was to make up for the podcast we didn't do last Sunday. So I guess more game time in a close succession for everybody. So yay to you, lucky listeners. Of course, we do ask these questions over on Twitter slash X. I will hopefully move them over to Facebook too in the coming future. But for now, we will leave them on here. You can tweet us at HoltCastPod to follow us, interact with us, and of course, vote on these. So there are three questions. I'll stop blabbering and I will let Simon answer these and read out the results as well. So, first question, are you happy with a waypoint at West Ham, Simon? I mean, yes or no? Yes, that's pretty simple. We've already went over this. Well, 91.4% said yes. I honestly feel like 91.4 would probably say hell yes, let's move on. 8.6 said no. So you know what? Sorry to the 8.6, but you lost that round. Second question, how far will Aston Villa go in the Europa Conference League? Your options obviously are the quarterfinals, semi-finals, the final, or they'll be the winners.
When winners.
Winners, good man. There, of course, 6.6 said quarterfinals, semifinals 10.2, final 30.6 in the winners. And I love this 52.6% of people that went with that vibe. I would join that vibe too. This is a very OCD thing, but I love how the votes in terms of totals went in order. It's very pleasing on the eye, and that never happens. But regardless of that, the final question, the most serious one, and I love people that actually did comment on this one. What's the best kind of beer? Now, don't hate me if I didn't put this. That's why I put other. I just put universal global beers that are sold around the world, just to make it simple. And it's St. Paddy's Day, so it's a good question. The options were Heineken, Budweiser, Guinness, or other. And if it was other, leave a comment below. So, Simon, what did you go with?
Out of those three options, I went for Budweiser, but for me, I would go a pint of neck oil. I don't know if you have that over there.
No, is it? What is it?
it's a lager, but it's like one of these sort of like craft beer lager type things.
Is it like a lighter beer? Like a blonde.
No, it wouldn't be like that. No, okay. It's like it's around like 4.5%. It's not, okay. Not too strong, but yeah, it's I really like it.
I'll be completely honest. I can't stand strong beer when it's like over like 6-7% because some of them are ridiculous. God, yeah. And it's like I just honestly I don't want to eat or anything. It's like a whole meal in itself.
Yeah.
It makes me want to go on Weight Watchers or something like that. But anyways, yeah, that would be for me. I mean, out of these three, I would probably say Budweiser. I went through a Heineken phase very briefly. Short little story there. I bought a mini keg one time when I went to a cottage for a week, and then when I went to open it, it was just all foam, even though I didn't touch it. So that was brilliant. So yeah, I lost money on that, which is very annoying. But anyways, 39.8% of people went for Guinness. 18.6 went for Heineken, 16.9 went for Budweiser, and 24.6 being in second place went for other. Now, some people did get involved. It says there's five comments. I can only see three, so sorry for two of you. I don't know where the other two comments are. But regardless of that, Nigel WV says, I'd go, I'm going to butcher some of these, Staropramen for a lager.
Yeah, that's a good shout, actually.
And Brennan's Irish Stout over Guinness. Don't know either of those, but fair enough. Apparently, I have to come to England, Ireland, Scotland to go for a booze tour to really understand half of these. Regardless of that, Mark Bannister says Guinness is great, but I prefer a Purity Mad Goose, Bishop's Finger, Old Peculiar Spitfire, Tribute. Variety is the cliche of life. I meant to say Old Peculiar and Spitfire, they're separate. I said them together, so I do apologize for that. And finally, Dean Gregory said, I'm more of a cider drinker, but I go for a Birra Moretti over the rest if I had to. I don't know what that is. Is that good, Simon?
It's a lager. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, nice, okay. Lager.
See, I'm not a massive drinker, I'll be honest. I'm a massive lightweight. I'm usually the person looking after people, where Simon's the person that's lost to the world. based on some of the experiences that he's briefly told us, and I'm sure that's only like 2% of that. But anyways, let's move on for that, and it's time for this.
So, you know, hence me getting a yellow card for saying I think you've had juggling balls for Christmas.
Okay, and welcome back to Dean Smith's Juggling Six, everyone's favorite Aston Villa-related guessing game, quiz game, whatever. I don't know what you want to label this, but regardless, of course, we pick one question and one question only, and depending on the panel, they have to guess it. This one is Alan Hutton based, and the only reason I went with Alan Hutton because he was on the TNT Sports panel
for
the game against Ajax, and I thought, what's old Hutts doing these days? And he's just stuck in my mind since Thursday. So, Alan, if you're listening to this, I'm thinking of you. Thank you for your contributions to Villa. This one's a little bit different. I'll give you two chances to get it wrong, so two lives. Now, when looking at Alan Hutton's career, I mean, there's several teams, probably more on loan. Yes, he's played for three permanently, and there's been four loans, so seven in total. So, Mr. Simon O'Regan, I want you to name six of the seven teams Alan Hutton has played for, which includes loans. And I think you might be able to do it.
Okay, so you've got Villa, Tottenham and Rangers, obviously.
Correct.
He was on loan at Forest.
Yes.
I believe.
Yep, there's four.
I know he was on loan in Spain, but I can't think. Was it Mallorca?
Correct. Right,
Mallorca.
Yes.
And I've don't...
There's a loan...
Bolton. One...
Correct. Do you want to go for the bonus point? Where was he on loan at when he was at Spurs in 2010?
Oh,
we've talked about them in this podcast. I don't know if that helps. I mentioned it, I think.
Oh, God. I didn't know that he went on loan when he was at Tottenham somewhere.
He made 11 appearances, no goals.
Can you give me any sort of clue?
They have been in the Premier League.
They have been in the Premier League. Oh, bloody hell.
They've also been in the Championship and League One.
Coventry?
Incorrect. It was Sunderland.
So, yeah, Well, yeah, yes. I vaguely do remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Interestingly enough, he made, I mean, this is according to Wikipedia, and I mean, of course, Wikipedia is always right. He made 374 appearances, 94 for Rangers, 51 for Spurs, 11 for Sunderland on loan, 185 for Villa, which it doesn't feel real, but apparently that was a thing from 2011 to 2019. In between then, of course, he was bombed out a few times, 7 appearances for Forest, 17 for Mallorca, 9 for Bolton, of course, and he only scored 5 goals in his career, 2 for Rangers, or sorry, no, he scored 7, 2 for Rangers, 2 for Spurs, almost forgot the Spurs one. And of course, 3-4 Villa. But we all know the best goal that he ever scored. What was it?
It's when the Birmingham City defense departed like the Red Sea and he turned into Messi for 10 seconds.
And he said, "Let my people go." And he put it right into the Blues goal. Oh, I love every time that comes up once a year. I love posting that.
Oh, Leslie. God, yeah.
Best thing, God. And I'd love to see him do more media, to be honest. I actually think he talks a lot of sense. And that's not a Villa bias either.
Yeah, no, he does, to be fair, on the on BBC 5 Live, he does a decent amount on the radio and like podcasts. Yeah, and you're right, actually, he's pretty good at it, I think.
Yeah, now if you could replace him with any other pundit, who would it be? In terms of getting rid of a pundit and putting Alan Hutton in.
I don't think there's a sheet of paper long enough for that list of names. I'll keep on that. Danny Murphy.
Fair enough. I was going to say Gary Neville because I don't mind Gary Neville half the time. But when he starts, you can tell he's just pouting whenever United are losing. And it's annoying because half the time they're not even playing. But regardless of that, good to know Alan Hutton's only 39 too. So I'm sure if you want it one last crack at, like, I don't know, going to that. What was the one team that was like signing like Wes Houlihan and Charlie Mulgrew, and they're like a non-league side, like not too long ago? Did you ever see that?
No.
I don't think it was somewhere in Coventry. I can't remember where it was. They signed like Wes Houlihan, Charlie Mulgrew, Ross McCormack. Yeah, there was a few. I think it was like a one-game thing probably just for publicity. But yeah, I'm sure Alan Hutton could rock up there for a game or two if he wanted to. But regardless of that, Simon, very well done to you. You didn't even need the two lives. And to be honest, I think there's only one time where anyone has failed. So maybe my questions need to be a little bit better. But regardless of that, before we wrap anything up, do you have anything else you want to mention?
No, not massively. Just it was really obviously important that we got that point today and have continued the run of not losing back-to-back games in the leagues so far this season, which is very impressive.
That's a very underrated stat, and I think it definitely needs to be talked more about, and I'm sure we will do that. Of course, now, like I said, we're into an international break, so there'll be a little bit of a hiatus from us. Hopefully, we'll be back before the Wolves game on the 30th of March, I believe it is. So we'll see what comes of that. We should be. Hopefully, I'm alive after I go to Nashville and Simon gives me all his awesome recommendations on that. But if not, of course, there'll still be plenty of stuff over on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it, and on Facebook for content to interact with us, which we always do appreciate that. Apparently, I can't talk already, so maybe that'll be my drunken stupor in a few days. But regardless of that, thank you very much to Simon O'Regan for joining me. Find him on X/Twitter at Cy O'Regan. Find me on there as well at Talk Aston Villa. Tweet the team at HoltCastPod. And of course, if you want to email us for any odd reason, it's HoltCast@gmail.com. We should be back soon. But anyways, don't forget, up the Villa.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.